All right, so before we start, I actually want to share with you not an idea, but a little... I got it here. So I want to share with you something very interesting. This week is the Herzog Yemei Iyun of Tanakh in Israel. Normally what happens is over the summer, there's like 5 days of lectures at Herzog, which is the Tanakh College, which is affiliated with Gush. And I've never been able to go because it's in the middle of the summer, it's the middle of camp, and it's in Israel. So there really are not many options for that. Yet this year, the entire thing is virtual. So no flight, it's free, and you could attend as many of the classes as you want. So I'll be honest, I thought that once it was on YouTube, I'd be able to watch it at my leisure. So the first day I watched the one that I wanted live, thinking it was live. And then I said I'll catch it all later. Didn't catch any of them. And then Monday came, and the Sunday shiurim were like not accessible. So I was like, ugh, the ones I wanted, I missed. So I'm hoping at the end, it's like, you know, the Art Scroll sale where like on the last day, they're like, and here you could watch everything. But I've quoted Rabbi Alex Israel a ton of times. I've read his stuff and his books a lot. I've actually never heard him live, or at least in, you know, speaking. So this was actually the first time I've ever heard him live, and he was amazing.
Does he have an accent?
Oh yeah, it's like totally British. ZV actually was up there, goes, oh my God, he must be related to the woman from Waze in Mommy's Car. Sounds exactly the same. So this year is not really so much of what he did on Sunday morning, but I really consider myself blessed to have had the opportunity to finally hear him live. He is really awesome. So I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Alex Israel tonight, and then hopefully at the end, if there's time, we'll circle back to a little bit of what he did on Sunday. So we asked the question last week about what we lain on Tisha B'Av morning, and how it really doesn't seem to be consistent for what we would expect on Tisha B'Av morning. And I shared with you the old custom that nobody knows is that they used to read Parshas HaMeraglim, which seems to be something that's more suitable. The question is, why is it that we read this on Tisha B'Av morning? We're not really going to discuss that. We kind of touched on that last week based on Josh's question. But what I want to try to figure out is, what's the message of these psukim? When we read these psukim on Shabbos and on Thursday, what are we supposed to get out of that? That's really, I think, the starting point for tonight. So, ki tolid banim uvenei banim, noshantem ba'aretz, vishchatem vasitem pesel tmuna kol, vasitem arabi, ne Hashem lokach lachi so. When you have children and grandchildren, they're going to be on the land for a long time. Either they'll get old on the land or they'll get fat on the land. And they're going to be corrupted, and they will worship idols. Now, this does not take all that long to happen. Anybody who is you don't even have to be a deep student of Tanakh, but even just on the most like cursory level, if you've learned 4th, 5th, 6th grade Tanakh, you know that it's all good in Yehoshua. And then the wheels fall off the bus in Sefer Shoftim. It's not like we have to wait all that long. Meaning when Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ki tolid banim uvnei banim, this is not one of these like children and grandchildren, like metaphorically. This is like fairly literal. Like it's going to happen pretty quickly. God, Moshe says, I swear, the witnesses will be Shamayim and Aretz, Kavod Tovedun, Maher Me'ala Aretz, Asher Atem Ovrim at the Yordain, Shamal Rishta. Right? You're going to be punished, and it's going to happen quickly. You're going to be lost from this land that you're getting. Lo Tarichun Yamim Aleha Kish Ameid Tish Ameidun. You're not going to live here for a very long time. You'll be destroyed. Now, the truth is, they do live there for several hundred years. The Beis HaMikdash is up for, first one is up for 410 years. And there's another 400 some odd years from Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the Jews are there for some 850 years about before they're kicked out.
Who are you talking to?
Moshe speaking to the Jews about to go into the land of Israel.
Right, so he's already speaking to two generations later, right?
The second generation, yeah.
And then he's saying Kisali Banimu Bnei Banim. He's talking about
the post Yehoshua generation. We're not talking about very far down the road. And you're going to be scattered throughout the land. That's a bracha in the sense that if we had been sent to one place, we probably wouldn't be here anymore. But the fact that the Jews are scattered across the world means that, okay, the Jews in one area get beat up, but in others not. You know, like if you just follow Ashkenaz and Sephardi Jewish history, you find that there are some times where life is good for the Sephardim and it's terrible for the Ashkenazim. And the flip side is there are times where the Ashkenazim are sitting back and saying, oh, it's like Sefer Shoftim, right? Ish tachas gefno, v'tachat teino, or whatever the appropriate, the equivalent would be in Europe, right? You're underneath your potato trees or whatever, on top of your potatoes, and whatever. So that's what happened. So that's the beauty of Jewish history. And you're gonna worship idols there, right? Or they will worship idols there. What does God say is gonna happen? Or Moshe says? Moshe says when you're there, the time will eventually come. You're going to look for God, and you're going to find Him when you look with all your heart and all your soul. I'm sure there's a Hasidish interpretation that would say, "Ki tidrushenu b'chol v'avcha b'chol nafshecha." You're going to. When is it that you're going to find Him? When you look really hard. Where? Not with your heart and soul, but in your heart and soul. You'll see that God has been there the whole time. Bad things will happen. You'll find God at the end of days, and you'll come back to God and you'll listen to His voice. Why? Because God is merciful, and God will never destroy us. He'll never forget the covenant He made with the Avos. That he swore to you, that he swore with them. Okay. Well, what's the message of this? The message is that this is Jewish history in a nutshell. Meaning, in the short term and in the long term. In the long term, God is saying, you're going to suffer. You will. Bad things will happen. But at the end of days, whenever that is, and hopefully it'll be really, really soon, we're going to return to God. At some point, we'll be kashtem misham eshem lokachu matzata. We're going to look for God. Now, I think that's important because often, and I think that like all the like thoughts back in like March and April, right before Pesach, were, you see, God is going to make it happen. We're going to open up the door for Eliyahu Navi at the Seder. He's going to be there. And then that didn't happen. So then the next one was, the plague of Rabbi Akiva's students stopped in Lag BaOmer. It's going to all be over in Lag BaOmer. It's not. So the latest prediction, of course, is Tisha B'Av. It's going to come and, it's all going to be over then. I don't know. And I was guilty because I sent a message to my brother and sister in Israel because I was convinced that if Mashiach came, for sure was going to happen in Israel first. I said there's a 7-hour time difference. You're going to be at your Seder and whatever. I said, I want you to call us and let us know. I was like, and if it happens a little bit later than the Seder, I was like, just leave a message on our machine. I said, don't call the cell phone. I said, call the house phone. It's like, so we could hear in the middle of the Seder, he's coming. But of course, sadly, we're still in the same spot. Why? Because I think that we and all the sound bites, because that's what it is. Rabbi Penner gave an amazing 30-minute shiur right before Pesach on Eliyahu Navi. It was amazing. And then I saw it so many times, just like cut up into like 2 minutes. And I was like, it took like the heart of the shiur out of it and just gave like that one sound bite. But I think that's precisely the point. It's not a sound bite. And it's not so quick and it's not so easy. Why? Because Batzar L'Chom Metzaucha. All these bad things are going to happen. But what? When are we going to go back to God? When we finally listen to Him. But what do we have to do first? From there, we actually have to want God. When you ask for God with your entire heart and your entire soul. I did mention this to one of the rabbis that I was speaking to over Pesach. I don't know. Like, part of my thought even is, like, it might not be so crazy to think that, like, part of all this is saying to God, like, if we really want you, like, we're going to come looking for you. So, like, you gave us, you know, Rabbi Gold, who was the rabbi here before Rabbi Kelemer, although I think there might have been a 1 year in between. So Rabbi Gold, I heard this from him over 20 years ago. He said this when he came to speak in Mevaseret. And it really, like, it stuck with me to this day. He said, like, we got, in 67, God gave the Jewish people, like, a lot of land. And then God had the Jewish people give it back. So he said, like, what happened there? So he said, it's simple. God said, Chatzia aretz lachatziam. If only half the people are here, right, the rest of the Jews don't come, so then you don't need the whole thing. I think there's a part of that here where you have to wonder, is it that God is saying, like, I need you to be proactive in the geula process, whatever that means, and then I'll see that you're vested in it. And again, I'm not paskening what Achris Hayamim looks like. I have no idea. But I wonder, at least from these psukim, how much of it has to be from us and how much of it has to come from God. It seems like this is much more driven by man than by God. So the question is, what's the message of this reading? So we're going to come back to that at the very end. But I want to go to a pasuk that we had last week in the Haftorah. Yeshaya says, "Ulei Hashem tzakos hotir lanu sarid kimat kistom hayinu la'amora deminu." We were almost like stone. We were almost like Amora. That's what we were like. What's Yeshaya talking about? So at the beginning of Perek Aleph, Yeshaya looks around and says to all the Jewish people, we don't have to go through the Vayiven Uziyahu again, but he says that, like, look, Israel's being built up. Everything's amazing. You're doing great things. There's only one problem. There's a certain sense of corruption, and the people are not doing what they need to do. And then he ends off by comparing the Jewish people to Sodom and Amora. How are we like Sodom and Amora? What was it about the Jews at the time of Yeshaya, who, by the way, are not the ones that have the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? That's going to happen another 150 some odd years, maybe even 200 years later. Yeshaya is like the midpoint of Bayit Rishon. So what was it that Yeshaya felt made the Jewish people so similar to Sodom v'Amora? So is it that Yeshaya, his main point is you need tzedek u'mishpat, you need everything to be righteous, and you need justice, and you need kindness, and that's not happening? And if it doesn't improve, Yerushalayim will fall? And is that his point? That's where you're like Sodom. Sodom was a place of cruelty. If there was anything that was missing in Sodom, it was the idea of tzedek. There might have been mishpat. There might have been judgment. But to say that there was tzedek, to say that there was righteousness, it's hard to believe in a place like Sodom. So what I want to try to do tonight is I want to try to understand how the Jewish people were like Sodom and Amora. And to do that, I think we have to take a look a little bit at what Sodom and what Amora were, and then to try to understand if perhaps that can give us a little bit of an insight into where the Jewish people messed up. So the first one is we take a look at Perek Yud Tet in Parshas Vayera. So Lot gets the visitors. Who are the visitors? The visitors are the Malachim, the angels that had visited Avram Avinu. They go from Avram Avinu, two of them come to Sodom, and they eat their matzah, and they're ready to go to bed. And Pasuk Dalet says, Terem Yishkavu, before they went to sleep, Anshei Ha'ir, Anshei Sodom, Nasabu Alabayit, Minar Vadzakein. The whole city, they all come, Minar Vadzakein. Now she points out that's where it's so messed up. It's Minar Vadzakein. Even there was no respect here. Nobody sits there and says, You know, the leadership should be coming first. The kids, the adults, they were all coming in this frenzied mob. The entire town of Sodom and Amora, they come pouring out, and they or the whole town of Sodom, rather, and they surround Lot's house. Lot, and they call out to Lot, where are the men that came tonight? Let them come out, and we'll get to know them. So Rashi points out that they want to sodomize the people that had come to visit him. Lot comes out to the door. He slams the door behind him. And he says, please, my brothers, don't do this. This is just not the way to treat guests. You can't touch them. They came in under my protection, and it would be wrong to do anything to them. Hinenali shtei banot. I have two daughters. Asher lo yadu ish. They don't know. They didn't know man, meaning two virgin daughters. Otziana eten aleichem asulan kato beinechem. Rak lanashim el al tasu davar ki al kein bo tzel koreti. Leave the guests alone. They came under my protection. Instead, I want you to rape my daughters. So anyway, that's like a messed up pasuk. Like, how does that happen? Meaning like, even like in the world of like bad parents. I don't say bad parents, but like not great parents, right? Like nobody says that. Right? People are willing to give their life to protect their
family. Take my son as an
arcade.
So this
person. Yeah, different. I mean,
well, they didn't say that. That was God.
Right. I mean, that's like no, God. Okay. That's God. That's God directive.
Instead of saying I'm calling ACS on God, he says, "Okay,
Right. So I mean, what Josh would say is that like the Avos were far from perfect. I think I maybe like changed it ever so slightly. Josh would say it a little bit differently, but.
No. It's
that's the general gist, right? They're not perfect. They're far from perfect. But there's still, like, there's a far cry. Meaning, like, when Dina is, like, kidnapped, right? Like, there is an outcry, at least from the family, maybe not as much from the father, which, you know, creates whatever. But I think Yaakov was badly hurt by the whole thing. And he's like, whatever. Like, you want my daughters? No problem. Just leave these guests alone. And, I mean, these are like the principles of, like, you know, it's great to have guests. But, like, your kids come before the guests, right? Like, that's just how it's supposed to be. So how could that possibly be that Lot is able to do that? So the answer is that one of the answers is that Lot was, unfortunately, misguided, and that's how Lot could end up sleeping with his daughters, both of them, and impregnating
that's how his
them.
Slept with him.
Say that again.
That's how his daughters slept with him.
Right, but right. So he was. Oh. It would never. Right, but like most people, you know, drunk as they are, aren't going to come to something like that. But you could see where Lot was. His like moral compass, if you will, was far off. But I don't want to focus on Lot because we've done that enough times. I want to focus on the people of Sodom. Like, what do we know about Sodom until now?
They weren't good men,
but what? Yes, but like, what is it that we're told? Like, when we think about them, like, what were the things that they did wrong? Like, we think about. Say again. So I don't think that's where we go midrashically with them. Like, midrashically, because we don't really know much when the psukim is that, I mean, the cries reach out to God. But, like, what are the things that they do? They're not a hospitable place. So what does that mean? It means that if you were poor and you happened to wander through Sodom, it wasn't going to end well for you. Either they weren't going to feed you, you'd die of hunger. Or they'd be like, come on in, we have this special bed, it's amazing, you need a good night's sleep. And if you were really tall, they put you on a short bed and chopped your legs off. And if you were really tall, if you were And the opposite, right? They would, you know, stretch you out. Like, it was cruel. But, like, in general, like, what do we picture it as? It's not a place that you would want to go if you needed, like, hospitality.
I always pictured it as, like, Manhattan under de Blasio.
Yeah. Where are you going with that? I, thank God, don't have to go to Manhattan
right,
much.
Stop recording. Okay?
What?
He's not my boss, but let's...
Yeah, so it's been duly noted that you stood up for him. You know, like, I had a...
Josh, say nothing about Cuomo, please.
I had a Rebbe in Israel who, Rabbi Mori Rubel, I felt like he nailed it. And, like, you know, at the time he said, like, there were five towns. It's like the five towns. It's a place where, like, kind of like the people are rough around the edges. And they're not necessarily so kind all the time.
Mori, let the record show that the rabbi called the five towns stone.
I did not. I said that there might have been some similarities.
You said like the five towns.
So, but I think it's where you have a place where people just like it's just not a welcoming. It's not an inviting. It's not the type of place you're going to come into and be like, all right, like, thank you, like, there's a person that needs, like, the help and whatever. Thank God we live in West Hempstead. I reject very strongly when people tell me I live in the sixth town. I'm like, well, we live in West Hempstead. And I'd say it's a community that's, thank God, built on the ideals and the ideas of Chesed. Okay, so that's always how I viewed, like, that's where they messed up. And that's where all the Midrashic literature talks about. Like, it's not that they were unfaithful. And it's not that they were worshiping idols. We don't know about them from that perspective. We just know that they're like mean, obnoxious people. All right. But this is like a whole nother level. The Neidautam, we're going to sodomize the guests. So what's pshat behind it? So one possibility that I heard years ago is that they wanted to do something that was so defining that nobody would ever think about coming again as a guest. Meaning this would get such notoriety that, like, if you were driving, walking, riding along the highway and you saw a stone, you'd be like, I know we're running low on gas. Let's chance it and just keep driving. I know that it's nightfall and the bandits on the road are dangerous, but I feel safer with the bandits than I do going into town.
It just so happens that after however many years there, I think it's way these three guys, I guess, are who they use to make these
in. Right. So that's why I'm a little stuck. Like, what's the idea? So Rabbi Alex Israel gives an amazing...
They already had reputation. It's not like it suddenly happened.
Right, but
say that all of a sudden now, this is well known.
Right, I guess the idea is that they wanted to take it to such a new level, it would guarantee that nobody else would ever come in. It's hard to believe that it's... Then they'd never be able to share the message. When they leave... I hear... Right, with, like, you know, blood on them, said, like, the people of Stone did this, right? Like, a real good, like, you know, gang murder. All right. So I want to share with you about Alex Israel's idea, because he says it's much more than that. It's not just a lack of hospitality, but it's so much more. It's a place that does not share anything with foreigners. Nothing. We don't give anything in Stone to the people on the outside. And yet, we'll use the foreigners to satisfy our most deviant pleasures. That's how he says it. And that changes it a little bit in the sense that when they're saying that they're going to Vinei Da'otam, what they're saying is that we don't believe that guests should be able to benefit in any which way from us, but we could benefit however we want from you. In this way, in the sexual way. But normally it would be, you come in, and we steal your stuff. You come in, we rob you. You come in, maybe even we kill you, and we get all your stuff as a result.
Like Vegas.
Okay. I mean, I hope, I've never been there, but I hope that Vinei Da'otam is only they get to know your wallet and your finances, no more. Yeah, it's true, because whatever happens there stays there. All right, fine. So that's one possibility. So is that really it? Is it just that, like, the Jews were, like, really inhospitable? And the Jews really, at this point in Yeshaya's time, just didn't do anything for anyone else. But they were willing to take and take and take, but not give. Or is it a little bit more than that? So Rabbi Alex Israel says, perhaps there's a deeper connection. And to understand the deeper connection, what we have to do is we have to go back to the previous story of stone. Just a little quick, like, a quick catch-up to where we are. Avram and Lot go to Mitzrayim. They come back and they're very wealthy. The land is not big enough for both of them. So Avram turns to, and then their shepherds start fighting with each other. Avram turns to Lot and says, it's not good, right? We should not have fights between you and me. We're brothers, right? Let's go our separate ways. Whatever way you go, I'll go the other way. You choose the right, I'll go the left, vice versa. Good with that. Lot looks around and says, let's see. I can go to the land of stone. It's lush and green. Or I can go to the Judean hills, which are rocky mountains. He says, all right, I'm going to choose to go with stone. Avram says, all right, well, if that's the case, I'm going to go in the opposite direction. Well, Lot goes to stone. But Yahalad stone, did he really go into stone or not? Okay, it's the machlokas of the Rishonim. But let's assume at some point he eventually goes into the city and he becomes part of the tapestry, part of the culture of stone. Amazing. Not so much. But what happens? God says, all right, we gotta do something here. So God brings in the battle of the five kings and the four kings. And the four kings are much stronger. And what do? They capture the five kings, Sdom, Amorah, the other three cities. And Lot is taken captive. One of the giants, one of the escapees of the battle, comes to Avram and says, you won't believe it. But Lot was captured. What are you going to do about this? So, all right, Lot was captured. I got to go. He takes his 318 finest soldiers, Gematria of 318, of Eliezer is 318. Maybe it was just Avram and Eliezer. And they go, and they save Sodom. And they rescue, they rout the four kings who are the superpowers of their day. And now what's left? Well, there's nothing left in the four kings. They bring back all of stone. So now Pasuk Tet Zayin. So what happens? He brings back, Avram brings back all the spoils. All their stuff comes back. The gamet lot achiv, and Lot his brother, right? Lot his nephew is saved. And also his stuff is saved. The gamet anashim ta'am. And also the women and the people. Everybody, Avram saves everybody, and Avram brings everything back to Sodom. So who's going to come greet them? Avram is greeted by two kings. Now, one of them is obvious. Of course, he's going to be greeted by the king of Sodom. Why? Yeah, because even if the king of Sodom is a jerk, you kind of say thank you, at the very least, to the guy that saved you. And that's if you're thinking about it from a positive perspective. From a practical perspective, why is he coming out? Because Avram won the war, and to the victor goes the spoils. Avram can make the argument that what? Everything is mine. And what does that do for the king of stone? He now is a king with no empire, and with no people, and with no wealth. So Melech Stone is for sure going to come. I have to tell you, I've read these psukim. We've done these psukim. I never thought about it. But why is Malki Tzedek there? Malki Tzedek is the other king that comes. Now, I believe it's Rashi that points out the reason why he came was to say, you killed my children. Right? Because a lot of the people, the four kings that you killed were from my branch of Noach, Amochel. That's why he's there. Okay, that's a possibility. Why is he there? Is it possible there's another answer? Also, who should talk first? Who do you think would talk first? Mel Stone, he's the one that's got more skin in the game. Especially if you accept Rashi's explanation that the only reason why Malki Tzedekah says that it comes to say, Amochel. Why is he rushing to get the first word in? It should be that the king of stone is the first one to speak. So look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayetzei Melech Stone likrato acharei shuvo me'akov dekatar la'omer v'tam lechim asher ito emek shavei hu emek ha'melech. So the king of stone comes out to talk to him. Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem hotzi lechem v'yayin. Malki Tzedek comes as well. He brings bread and wine. V'hu kohen le'el elyon. And he is the kohen to God. Okay? Whatever that means. Vayivarcheu vayomar. Now, Malki Tzedek gets the first word in. Vayivarcheu, he blesses him. Vayomar, and he says, Baruch Avram lekel elyon kohenei shamayim va'aret. I want to bless Avraham to God who created the world. Ubaruch kel elyon asher begins arecha biyadecha. Vayiten lo maser mikol. I'm sorry, biyadecha. And he says to him, and I bless God who protected me from my enemies from me. And Avraham, vayiten lo maser mikol. Avraham gives him maser. Avraham gives him a tenth of everything. What in the world is Malki Tzedek doing? What is he saying? So the Gemara Nedarim actually beats up on him. He says, and this is for people that drink, they should know this, that when you have a shot, right? When I learned this Gemara 20 years ago, this is what they said. So when you make a l'chaim, what should you do first? Shahakol or hagafen, whatever you're drinking, you should make first. Take a sip and then say l'chaim. Why? Because what's l'chaim? That's a bracha for who? Man. That's my bracha, right? I want to live a long life. What's baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam shakol nihyeh bedvaro? It's a blessing that God is everything. So if I do it the other way around, l'chaim, and then I make the shahakol, then I am what? I'm doing what Malki Tzedek did. The Gemara Nedarim says, because he blessed Avram before he blessed God, he loses the kahuna. And the kahuna is swapped out and goes to Avram Avinu. But that's a nice drush. What's pshat in these psukim? What's Avram? What is he telling Avram? Right, thank God, you know, the God of Avram, and you're good, and thank God for saving us, and whatever. And why does Avram have to give him maser mikol? Why does Avram give him a tenth of everything? But now, look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph. What is the king of stone going to say? Vayomer melech stone el Avram. He says to him, I want the people. I want the human capital. But you could have the money. Take all the stuff. But I want the people. I guess, you know, it's possible that as long as you get the people, you could always rebuild yourself, right? Great, great, you know, article. Mark Cuban, such a humble man. So he said, you know, listen, if I lost all my money, and I was no longer a billionaire, I'd for sure be able to make myself into a millionaire again. Because millionaires are made through wisdom. And billionaires are made through mazel. Doesn't say it exactly in those words. Right? So maybe that's what Melech Stom is saying. As long as I have the people, right? I have the resources to rebuild myself. But if I only have the money, I won't have a kingdom, and that will be the end of me. That's what he says to Avram. Interesting. He uses what? Whose language is that? That's not right. That's not his words. Those are exactly what Malki Tzedek said. He says, I lift my hand up to God. I won't take a string or a shoelace from you. And I won't take anything from you. Because I don't want you to be able to say, I made Avraham rich. Where did Melech Stom say that? What was Melech Stom saying to him? He's saying, I throw myself before you. You're Avraham. You're the king. I just ask for my subjects back. Take everything else I have. Where is Avraham getting these words from? And he says, Bil adai rak asher achlu anerim v'chelek anashim asher olchu ti, aner ashko mamrei hem yikru chalkam. He says, the only thing I ask is that the food that my men ate, that you don't charge me for it, and my allies, aner ashko mamrei, they should be able to take a portion of the spoils. They should get something. But nobody else, I don't want anything. Not even a little bit. Not a shoelace, not a string, not a nothing. And in the schus of that, what do we get? We get mitzvos with strings. We get maybe tefillin. We get tzitzis. All right. What in the world is going on here? And I have to be honest. Until I saw this piece by Rabbi Alex Israel, these psukim made, it was like Malki Tzedek was just there. I don't know why he was there. Never thought about it. The King of Stone was making his petition. What's going on here? I want to share with you what I believe is a brilliant, brilliant thought on these psukim. Rabbi Alex Israel says that the King of Stone was coming to Avraham with a proposal. And the proposal was, it's time to make an alliance. See, Avram, I know where you were. You came to this land, and you're a ger. You don't have an achuzah yet in this land. The haraya, the proof of it is, Parshas Chayisar is not that long afterwards, and what does he say? Ger toshav anochi machem. And he says, tunli achuzah kever. I have nothing. So the King of Stone says, listen, now's the time to make an alliance. All right, you've just proven that you're not just another guy. There's something qualitatively different, you know, in you. I recognize that. What I offer you is, I'm going to give you stability and status. Become my ally. And by becoming my ally, I give you everything. I just want the people. We're going into partnership together. Rabbi Alex Israel felt that this was intuitive, that was going to happen. Avram had just lifted himself up. The first person that would make an alliance would be the first king that he would see. And who is that? It's the King of Stone. Malki Tzedek recognizes that and says, Avram might fall for that. And it might even make sense for Avram. But I have to remind Avram that that doesn't make any sense. Because when you take something from someone, you're indebted to them forever. Rabbi Franz has a great story where he says, why is it that children always give their parents a hard time? Because they're indebted to them and nobody wants that. He said, it's easier to be indebted to a total stranger that you'll never see ever again. He said one time he was driving one of these old jalopies down by D.C. on July 4th weekend and his car broke down, shut down the highway and everything. It was some random stranger came, jumped his car, whatever you had to do to fix it. And they were off on their merry way. Goes, I don't know who the guy is. I'll never see him again. He's a great story. But I don't owe him anything. Because I'll never have to worry. We're never going to bump into each other again. Avram Avinu was not going to enter into that kind of relationship. He was going to enter into a relationship if the King of Stone was giving him all this money. He was going to be entering into a relationship where he'd be heavily indebted to him. And when that happens, it means that there will have to be a back and forth. And that will erode who Avram really is. So what does Malki Tzedek tell him? Malki Tzedek reminds him, Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon Konei Shamayim Va'aretz. It's God. That's your alliance. And that's who you have to team up with. And that's who's going to protect you. And that's who's going to take care of you. Avram, don't forget that. Would Avram have forgotten that? I don't know. But Malki Tzedek wasn't willing to take that chance. So he comes and jumps in front of Melech Stone and says, not yet. You can't talk yet. I want to talk first. And Avram hears it. What does he do? Vaitein lo Avram, Vaitein lo Maser Mikol. He gives him a tenth of everything. Besides Baruch Kel Yon, right? Arimoti Adi Al Hashem Kel Yon Kanesh Amayim Baretz. Besides that common ground in the language, Ani he'esharti Avram. Where is that coming from? Because he'esharti and ma'aser are the same word. Aser bavur shetit asher. That is the same derivative. What's Avram saying? Avram is saying, I swear and I pledge my allegiance to God and only to God. What the people of stone want to say is that you don't need to pledge allegiance to God, but you pledge allegiance to man. Your future lies in the relationships, and more than relationships, because I don't think they were big in those kinds of relationships in stone. But it's built on mutual gain and interest that I get by my alliances and by my connections that I build. That's what he's saying to Avram. Avram, let's make connections. Look how far we can go together. And what does Avram say? Avram says, no, it doesn't work that way. My relationship is going to be with God. I don't want anything because I don't want to be indebted to you. Says Rabbi Alex Israel, perhaps that's what stone. God is saying, through the words of Yeshaya, we were almost like stone. What does that mean? It means that we almost forgot that our relationship comes not from the connection to God, but it comes from relationships with others. If you read the history surrounding Yeshaya's time, it all was a question, who do you ally with? Do you ally with Egypt? Do you ally with Egypt / Aram, Ezeran alliance? Or do you ally yourself with Ashur? Who is the safest pick? Who is the safest bet? And what Yeshaya keeps telling them is there's only one safe bet. Be neutral. Be neutral. Don't pick any of them because they're all fleeting. And they're all like sticks that are on fire, but they're going to blow out. And when it's all over, the only relationship that will last is the relationship with God. Yerushalayim and stone, says Rabbi Alex Israel, are complete opposites. It's a question of who will impact who. Will the greatness of Yerushalayim impact stone? Or will the terrible nature of the people of stone impact Yerushalayim? Yeshaya is saying, sadly, we've moved far, far from being Yerushalayim, and we've become much like stone. Zechariah and Yechezkel, when they have their nevuos talk about the end of days, and both of their nevuos talk about how Yerushalayim will flourish and it will impact stone. I believe it's Zechariah that says on the Yom Hashem, the day that Hashem comes to make everything better, water will flow from Yerushalayim. It doesn't really happen. Yerushalayim doesn't really have much by way of water. And that water will flow down where? It'll flow down and re-irrigate and make green the lands of stone that were destroyed, and it will turn Yam HaMelach into a vibrant living water again. That's Yeshaya's complaint. Yeshaya turns to the Jewish people and says, you missed it. Kemak Yestom Hayinu. I believe in this week's Haftorah, Yeshaya offers the exact opposite. He says, what is it supposed to be? Al Har Gavo Alilach Mevaseret Zion. Go up onto that top, on that high mountain, and share your words there. And maybe even more powerful than this week's Haftorah is the Haftorah, the end of the Haftorah of Parshas Ekev. At the end of the Haftorah, it says, Shimuei Lai Rodfein Tzedek Mevakshei Hashem. Listen to me, those people who chased Tzedek. That's what Yeshaya says is missing in Yerushalayim. Mevakshei Hashem. Like our psukim, right? The day will come where we're going to look for God. Habitu al tzur chutzavtem makeve bor nukartem. Go look in all the cracks and all the crevices. Habitu al Avram avichem. Look for Avram. Vel sara techol elchem and sara. Kiachad krativ avarcheu varbeyu. We'll bless them and you'll be great. Ki nicham Hashem tzion. Nicham kol charvotel. Because God will feel bad. God will console Tzion and all of its destroyed cities, Vayasem Idbarak Eden, and its deserts, and its destruction will be like Eden, Va'arvata, and its barrenness, Kegan Hashem, Sasum V'Simcha Yimat Seba, Todah V'Kol Zimra. And once again, there will be happiness and joy going through the land. That, I believe, is the message that Yeshaya is trying to tell them. Yeshaya is telling them that the day will come when stone will be, the amp will be sustained by Yerushalayim, and when that happens, the world will be a much better place. Kein Yehi Ratzon. I want to end with one last possibility. So we started with Ki Tolid Banim. Why do we need this? What in the world is going on? Why do we read these? And what's the message of these psukim? Is it just that you're going to sin and do a lot of terrible things, and then eventually, one day, what's going to happen? We're going to have this aha moment. We're going to look and say, wow, we really messed up. Like, it's really bad. God, you know what? I'm sorry. We're ready to come to you with our entire heart and our soul. Is that really what it is? So Rabbi Alex Israel says the following. He says that if you look at Sefer Melachim and you look at Sefer Divrei Yamim, you'll find that Sefer Melachim is all negative. So many terrible things. And then you get to Sefer Divrei Yamim, everything sounds so much better. He says, why is that? So he says that what is Melachim all about? Sefer Melachim is all about, I know some of you have heard this, but I've got like a twist at the end, which is like the new thing from Sunday when I heard Rabbi Alex Israel. What is Sefer Melachim? Sefer Melachim is like the indictment. Like, look, you guys messed up. What is Sefer Divrei Yamim? No, there's hope. There's a chance that it'll be better. Okay? So what does that have to do with Kitolid Banim? So he says, the idea of Sefer Melachim, like, what is the indictment? The indictment is Poked Avon Avot Al Banim. Is that I'm damned. Because why? Because my parents messed up, and my grandparents messed up, and my great-grandparents messed up. There's no hope, because I'm stuck in such a deep hole, there's no way to get out of it. That is Sefer Melachim. So Jewish people look and say, like, well, there's no hope for me. Why should I ever think it'll be better? There's Menashe, he totally messed up. Yoshiyahu's best efforts couldn't possibly fix all that. And that's Vayikonen Yirmiyahu, Yoshiyahu, that's the most authentic of the kinos that we're going to read on Tisha B'Av morning. But there's no hope. And in the times of Yoshiyahu, why wouldn't I worship idols? Because there's this young king who says it's going to be better. Like, why does he think it's going to be better? How could we undo what Menashe did? Comes along, Sefer Divrei Yamim, says, no, there's always hope. And there's always a chance. And it could always be better. Kitolid banim uvnei banim. What is this? This is saying that, yes, your children will mess up. But they're not damned and condemned forever. There is a chance to come back. I think you could argue the following. The people of Stone, they don't look back and they don't look forward. They just look at the moment. In the moment, what works best for me? And that's what I do. And that's why you don't really make relationships, because relationships are all about the past and the future. It's not only about the present. But if all you are about the present is you look and say, like, what's in it for me? I have nothing to offer. I have nothing to share. I have nothing to give. It's just, what can I take? That's the idea behind Stone. But what is Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim is the opposite. Yerushalayim is a city that's built on the past, the long and deep past, and so many thousands of years that we go back there. But it's also based so much on the future. That's what Yerushalayim is. Perhaps that's the idea behind the comparison to Stone. It's saying that we don't have to feel that we're stuck forever. Yes, we're like that, but that's because we're only looking at the present. But Kitolid Banim, what happens if you look at it from the perspective of Moshe Rabbeinu? That there will come a time where people will be reflective. They'll look backwards and then they'll look forwards. If that happens, that's where you realize you're not stuck in the present. I believe the message of Kitolid Banim, the message of Vayeschanan, and perhaps the message of Tisha B'Av is, we're not stuck. We're only stuck if we're not willing to look backwards and forwards. If I look at my present and say, oh, look how bad it is, then I won't be able to get out of it and I won't be able to make it any better. But if I look and say, no, there is hope, there is a future, there is Acharit HaYamim, whenever that is, that's a person that has the ability to move forward. My hope is that we'll be able to see the words of Yeshaya come true. Kinicham Hashem Tzion. Right? That God will find comfort for us in Tzion. And that we'll be able to look forward. And we'll be able to be reflective. And hopefully that will give us the opportunity to go from miyagon to sason simcha, to happiness and joy, and Amir Tashem will see happy days ahead.